The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back to Horticulture's Field of Rushy, and we are like a beehive of activity here trying to learn something that you can help us with. You can help us with. I brought an old rotten persimmon I found on the way in. Actually, I found it a couple of weeks ago, and this morning I found it in my Jeep. And I opened it up. It's nasty. It smells nasty. It makes my fingers sticky. But I got the seed out of it. And Lisa Lancaster, who's one of the producers here, she told me not to tell anybody where I got the knife, but she found a knife in her purse, and we cut it open.
Handy dandy Lisa.
That's right. What we're trying to do is find out when you take a persimmon seed out of the persimmon, and the seed is shaped like a watermelon seed. It's sort of oval and flat. You cut it, not half to. You cut it like you would open a clam or a mussel. You know, you have to cut it, and it ain't easy to do. And the embryo inside, the little part that's going to be the tree next year. It's got a little stem on it, and the round part is either round or it's straight or it's forked, which means a knife, spoon, or fork, and Java. Supposedly, you can tell what kind of winter we have by what kind of embryo, knife, fork, or spoon. Now, you've looked it up. I don't want to know what it is. I want folks to call up and tell us
what y'all think it is.
Knife, fork, or spoon. And I'll tell you a little bit later, we'll reveal what this one did. But we have a unanimous opinion of what the my persimmon seed is. What's going to predict what kind of winter we're going to have. Oh, me, Job, I don't know if I believe in this stuff. It's just like planting by the moon. It's like, you know.
Well, that's why I asked who came up with these predictions.
Yeah, I think it's those old boys who live up on that mountain that they film Deliverance in. They sit around, they don't have anything else to do, so they just, you know, find a stuff that has something to talk about, you know. Boy, don't those 4 o'clock smell good. I just think I saw a lightning bolt. Hey, y'all, look what happened. I just cut this thing open. Oops, there goes my finger.
And we're going to have a hearty winter.
Yeah. So anyway, folks, this is the call-in gardening program. And this sort of, you know, it's like the groundhog thing. Whether, believe it or not, it's an exercise. So if you have an idea hopefully without looking it up, if you just know whether the knife, fork, or spoon inside a persimmon seed, what it indicates, give us a call. It's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. This whole place smells like soured persimmon.
That persimmon you brought in was kind of past due a couple of days.
Fermented. Probably can't get on a plane with that. It's got so much alcohol in it. But anyway, we're going to just talk about gardening, folks. Give us a call. We've got the lines wide open. Last week, we broadcast live from the Max over in Meridian. Had a fun time. And the next day, had a talk about winter gardening. So if you got some questions about what you can do now to get ready for having a beautiful garden that doesn't take much care in the middle of the winter, we can sure talk about that. But it's also time to sort of wrap up things from the summer garden, vegetables and herbs, and think about getting ready for winter, or if not planting things, at least putting the garden to bed for the winter. You know, what can you do that's easy to do that's going to really help make the garden look a whole lot better next spring? What can you plant on bare dirt that'll grow in the winter? You can turn it under in the spring and all that. Mulches. I just wrote a column about different kind of mulches. I'm so, you know, such a boring topic for horticulturists, but there's some interesting little details, and people like me can talk for 45 minutes about the benefits, the pros and cons of different kinds of mulches. Whether I'm a pine straw person or I like bark, well, whatever. We can talk about that kind of esoteric. Java, That's what we do here.
Well, when it comes to mulch, I know they sell it by the bag at the home store.
Yeah, bags and by the truckload and truckload and truckloads. But sometimes you can find what you need to use for mulch just laying around the yard. So anyway, I'm going to put my bifocals. I'm going to lean over, see if I can see this thing. It says Joel from Picayune. Hey, Joel, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Well, wonderful. Thank you, sir.
You bet. What's up?
Well, I bought a half dozen of these Dunston chestnut trees to plant in the field to attract the deer.
Yeah.
And every single one of these trees lost their leaves. They dried up, brown, and fell off.
Yeah.
Tips of the trees are still there, so I know the deer are not nipping them. There's no webbing. There's no worms on them. They just all dried up and fell off.
Yeah. When did you
and
plant
I'm getting
these?
Some new growth on it now, but I'm like, what the hell happened to it?
Yeah. Well, when did you plant them? This year?
Yes, all of them were, no, I take that back. Two of them were last year, and the other four were this year.
Okay, I'm really leading up to something. About when did you plant them? Wintertime, spring, summer, what?
It would have been springtime.
Okay, well, here's the deal. First of all, if the leaves turn brown and stick on it, that's a bad sign. But if they fall off, that just means the tree went through some stress. In other words, of the what the heck's going on here, that's the best outcome. So as long as you hadn't hit the trunk with the lawnmower or the string trimmer or anything like that, they'll do fine. You know, they just went through some stress. How big are these?
The two biggest ones I planted last year and this year are both about 8 to 9 feet tall. Both had chestnuts on it last year.
Yeah. Here's the deal, though. When you put the bigger tree you put out, you know, if you were to hug yourself with your arms, that's what the roots are on a new plant. They want to have arms. You know, you stick your arms way out and wiggle your fingers straight out. That's what they want to have. So you're starting out with a full grown top part and a weeny root system. And so what happens is those roots aren't enough to keep the plant both alive and thriving the first year. So it's a race between the tree putting out new leaves and dying. And yours is saying, I don't feel so great, but I think I'll do better tomorrow.
Gotcha.
So what I would do, go out sometime over the winter, or even now if you want to, and kind of loosen up the dirt. Just take your shovel, you know, don't chop any roots, but just sort of loosen up the dirt around the edge of the original hole so the roots can grow straight out. That's the important thing, straight out quicker. And we've had plenty of rain, you know, we've had plenty of water, but one thing you might want to do over the wintertime is if they've got a bunch of branches or limbs, thin some of them out. Cut a few branches. You know, think of how's the tree going to look 10 years from now. You don't need that many limbs at that spot. So thin some of the limbs out, and then thin a few of the branches off what's left, and the energy that would have gone to what you cut off will go to what's left, and it'll grow better. It balances the top with the roots.
Okay.
Don't leave any stubs. Just go out there. You can do it with one hand in your pocket. Just, you know, cut them off. Don't leave any stubs. And just cut, just thin out some of the limbs and then a few of the branches. And that's about all you need to do.
I got you. Let me ask you one thing else. What else could I do to attract deer out there?
Well, you can go to the co-op. You can buy corn. There's all sorts of illegal stuff. You can put corn and all. I'm not a deer hunter. I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that there are wildlife specialists with the Extension Service who have little publications on that. If you go to msucares.com and just in the little search box say attracting deer or something like that, you'll have all sorts of wildlife specialists with little tips and stuff on it. Or go to the co-op where hunters shop and just sort of, you know, put your hands in your pocket and say, hey, guys, what do y'all think about this? And you'll get more information you can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I guess you're right on that.
Yeah. Yeah, both.
Well, we got these other little plants called a deer pear, they're calling them, at Walmart.
Yep.
And I grabbed three or four of them, and they put out a little pear thing. They call it a pear. It looks about the size of a plum.
It is a pear, yeah. Yeah, you know, what we think of pears are hybrid pears. The wild ones are small, about the size of the end of your thumb or something.
I got you. That's what these are.
Yeah.
I was wondering if I just got some weird plant out there that they thought was a pear.
You know, my son's, I'm not a hunter. I'm not a fish. You know, I knock around the yard, but my son, he knows all this kind of stuff because he does a little internet research, but also he just shoots the breeze with people who do this. So, you know, use that approach.
I appreciate the info on it then.
All righty. Appreciate your call, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, I know what he's saying. He wants to attract deer close to the house so he can take pictures of them.
Now, we get calls on Creature Comforts about getting the deers away from the house, though.
I don't know if the Creature Comfort folks want to attract deer to a hunter stand, though.
Yeah, it's kind of a balance, and I don't think Joel was trying to, you know.
No. He just wants to have, you know. What I should have said was plant some azaleas and some hostas.
Oh, because they're coming.
plant some flowers in your front yard. Bam, you're gonna have deer.
There you go.
Okay, now let's go up to. I think it's. I don't have my. I have my.
It's okay. I got okay. You,
Felder. It looks like Steve from Boonville. Okay. Hey, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to, in a friendly way, I want to hold your feet to the fire to just get your opinion on something.
Okay.
I listen to you quite often, and I learn a lot from you. I'm from Florida, and I settled up here in my wife's stomping ground, so I've learned a lot about what grows up here and what to tinker with out the yard.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot of the old folklore stuff, quite a bit of it being accurate. It was fascinating to see the signs of the oncoming season with the woolly worms or the yellow butterflies
or
foggy morning.
Yeah.
Okay, but I want to ask you, what is your opinion of the Farmer's Almanac? Because I want to know how accurate they are.
Okay. Well, first of all, my opinion versus what research has shown. Research has shown, it's just okay. You know, they're not any more or less accurate than other folks. In other words, they're based on what we pretty well know that it's going to get cool halfway through the state fair. Well, you don't need an almanac to tell you that, but the almanac people compile that information, you know. So they put a lot of folklore and observations. It's called, what's the word? I'll think of the word later, but in it's a word about things you notice in nature that hint that something's about to happen. I can't think. Anyway, they've compiled a lot of observations from hundreds of years of what does well. Here's a problem. The almanac is published in New England. And it doesn't work here, you know, in the deep south. Okay. It doesn't work as well, you know. They say you plant this plant with that plant. Well, they grow in different times of the year for us. See, so a lot of it is folklore. It's based on historic information. We know, you know, about when the average frosts and all like that are. But as far as planting by the moon, people will absolutely swear by it. If you dig a hole for a fence post, a wrong time of the moon, you won't have enough dirt left to fill it up. If you dig it the right time, then you can have dirt left over. My opinion is, you know, it's made for selling advertisements. And that's what it started out as. It started out as one of those little, you know, you pick those little magazines at the grocery stores, local stuff, that got pictures of people being married, and they got a gardening column and all like that. But it's mostly to sell advert. That's my opinion. But at the same time, my opinion is it doesn't hurt to plant by the moon. So why not have some fun with it?
But, well, I heard one view of that was planting root vegetables by the moon.
Yeah, because of the pull, the gravitational pull of whatever. And the scientist me desperately wants to believe that that's true. But my opinion is, meh.
Well, I know you're working on more of the science side of it.
No. I have left brain and right brain, a big, deep divide between the two. I have no problem doing stuff because it sounds good. No, zero problem. The scientist in me retired years ago. The gardener in me just wants to have fun. And the almanac stuff is fun. But matter of fact, here's my opinion. I have to plant some garlic. I've got some garlic cloves I'm going to plant them this week. I'm going to plant them last weekend, right? Well, I looked online, and it was the wrong time last week. So I put it off. Why? Because I believe it? No, because I was looking for an excuse to not have to do anything. But here's the truth is, I resent even having to think about it. But now that I do, let's have some fun.
Okay.
It's like when a black cat crosses your path. Is it good luck? In England, it's good luck. Here, it's bad luck. I wish I didn't think about it. But I do, and it sort of adds that little human element to it. So there we go.
Okay.
So what did I just sum up what I just said?
That... it's based on a lot of history and research, but they've also mixed it in with folklore, and you can take it as a grain of salt and just experiment around, see what's accurate and what isn't.
Yep, just like taking a grain of salt. That's one of them things.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I wanted your scientific view on it. I appreciate it
yep.
very much so.
All righty. Well, the science is right about half the time.
Okay. I appreciate it.
See you, my friend.
Thank you.
Okay, was I wrong in saying, okay, what did I just say? Because I got confused.
Steve summed it up really, really well, because I was going to just say, Felder, you said a whole bunch of nothing.
Yeah, I did. Well, I started out saying, meh. You want me to elaborate? And when we come back, we're going to go down to Flowood and talk about gardening. Then we slide up to Oxford, where I was day before yesterday. I saw the coolest thing on the Mississippi Gardening Facebook thing. Somebody posted a picture of one of the most bizarre mushroom-looking things I've ever seen. I've only seen it once in my life, been at least 30, 35 years ago. Took a picture of it, but that was slides and lost it. Anyway, we're going to talk about the ghost pipe when we come back. Got some phone calls first, but I want to talk about being shown three patches of the ghost pipe up near Oxford. I'm horticulturist Phil DeRush, and me and Java and Lisa, I got your knife. I got the knife you found back. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jason Klein from Fix It 101. If you ever thought about changing a doorknob or fixing a leaky faucet, some jobs just aren't that difficult, and yes, you can do it. If you want to find out how to do those things, listen to Fix It 101, podcast everywhere.
Okay, spoon, knife, or fork? I cut this persimmon seed open, and I see what it is. What do y'all think it tells us about the winter? But first, let's go down to Flowood. Ethel, good morning. Thank you for holding.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. Well, I listened to your show enough to know that you're supposed to raise your lawnmower blades up high.
Yep.
But what happens if the deed is done, the lawnmower was down too low and the lawn was scalped, other than watering, and you also talk about winterizing, when to do it and when not to do it.
Yeah.
That's one of my, I got a couple other ones.
Okay. Well, here's the, first of all, you know, I don't have a lawn. You know, I was raised mowing grass. I said I'm not going to do it when I get to be grown up. I studied turf management at Mississippi State. I worked with golf courses and athletic fields. I worked with home gardeners. I worked with commercial lawn maintenance. Talked a long time with the lawn maintenance guy last night at the pub. I know a lot about grass, but I don't have an opinion. I'm going to tell it from the grass's point of view. Doesn't matter to me what people want. Here's what the grass wants. And when you scalp it, it desperately wants to quickly put out some new growth and survive. So it will. It'll cut, you know, unless they cut it down to the roots, then it will put out new growth. The problem is it's going to be real thin because it gets energy from those leaves that were cut off. So it's got to put out stuff from stored up energy, and it's got to fill in quick enough to keep weed seeds from getting the sunshine they need to sprout. So when you cut it real close, you weaken the grass, it will survive, but you open it up for weeds. So that, you know, right off the bat, I would just raise them more up, and I don't think you really need to water it because we had a good rain the other day. You know, I know Flowood got that rain we had the day before yesterday, so the grass got plenty of water. It does not want to be pushed with fertilizer this time of day. You don't get a kid, give a kid a Snickers.
Late.
What's that? Yeah, it is.
It's too late in the winter.
Here's the reason why. You don't give a kid a Snickers bar right before bedtime because the sugar is going to make them bounce off the wall. And same thing with the lawn. You want to fertilize it early enough in the season so it can grow, it can use a fertilizer, convert it into stuff, and then the grass settle down before it gets cold. So the usual cutoff date for putting nitrogen on the lawn is around the 1st of September. The earliest I would recommend fertilizing, based on what the grass needs, is around sometime in April. No earlier than April, no later than the end of August, and that's from the grass's point of view, not sales point of view or fertilizer salesman point of view. April to late August, that's fertilizer. Anyway, you know, that's the best you can worry about. One thing I will mention, because the grass is thin, right now the weed seeds for the spring are sprouting this month. So you can expect to have maybe a few more winter wildflowers, I'm going to call them wildflowers, you know, in March and April. So if you don't like those, you need to make a note to use some kind of spray in January when the weeds are still small. The grass is dormant. The weeds are small. So if you like wildflowers, you're going to have plenty. If you don't, make a note to use a spray sometime in late December, January.
Okay. All right. Question number two. Are there some books about landscaping with native plants?
Yes, there are. As a matter of fact, I have a free booklet I will send you if you got an email. Send me an email. I put together a little booklet on using native plants and wildflowers in the landscape. It's got all sorts of stuff, and it's written for us: Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee, Arkansas, maybe Panhandle, Florida. It's written for our part of the country. And also you go to the Mississippi State website and just type in the search. It's called MSU Cares. It doesn't mean that they really care. It's about coordinated access to research and experiment, whatever. MSU Cares. And then in the search box, just type out landscaping with native plants. And they've got a friend of mine named Bob Bruzak wrote some really, really good, short, but thorough little publications. It's all online for free.
Good.
Now, here's my email. Go to, forget anything else. Just go to Felder Rushing Blog, BLOG. Don't go to my website. I hadn't checked the email on that for years, but Felder Rushing Blog. It's got a little thing there that says email me. Click on it.
Okay, great.
And it's a free little publication, but it's maybe, 18 or 20 pages, or maybe 15 or 20 pages, but it's free.
Okay. One other thing. I'm going to put in some, I've been working on my soil. I'll put in some fall vegetables, but just any kind of tips on that.
Do it this weekend. Fall gardening doesn't mean waiting until fall to plant. It means harvesting in fall. So the sooner you do it, the better. You can plant garlic this month and harvest it in the spring. You can plant all sorts of leafy greens, lettuce. Mix two or three different kinds of lettuce together and make little clumps of that, little salad clumps here and there. You can plant mustard and turnips. You can plant pansies, kale, all different kinds of kale. I think it's a little bit late for sowing seeds of things like carrots and beets and stuff, because it takes a while and we're going to get winter before they come up. But those other things, the lettuces, the mustards, the turnips, the kales and garlic, this is a great time.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Appreciate your call.
I'll listen to you.
Oh, let me ask you something. Have you ever heard about the spoon, the knife, and the fork in persimmon seeds?
No, I think I've heard it before, but I don't have I'm passing on an opinion.
Okay. All right. Well, appreciate your call, Ethel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, who's next, Sir Java?
We got Cynthia in Oxford who's been patiently holding on.
Hey, Cynthia, I was up in Oxford yesterday. I walked around the community garden down there by the library. It's a really cool little thing they got going.
Isn't that nice? And they donate a lot of that food to the food bank here.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, do you know any of the folks down there?
A little bit. I've just chatted when I've been out that way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next time you see them, tell them, they got all sorts of nice pollinator plants outside their fence. Tell them to put some okra. Tell them to put some okra plants out there, because it's pretty and the poor folks looking through the fence can have something to munch on.
Great idea. Yeah. So I've got a quick comment and then a question. So on the phases of the moon and planting, I actually tried that a few times, and it actually works. I don't know if it's coincidence, but my understanding is that it has to do with the tides and the moisture, and that the full moon pulls more moisture.
I've heard all that. The moon doesn't change size, and its gravitational thing is about the same. Anyway, I don't want to get into why, but it doesn't hurt to plant by the moon. That's my approach.
It doesn't hurt, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah,
makes you more aware of nature,
exactly.
And noticing things.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking maybe the seeds has something to do with that too, in terms of the amount of moisture.
Right.
But my question is, so I have a sunny spot. It's kind of up against the house, and it's the best sun in my yard for a vegetable garden. But I was told by a pest control guy that they treat for termites, and that you shouldn't actually plant vegetables close up against the house because of the long-lasting pesticides that they put in when they build the house. And so I was going to do some raised beds with flagstone and gravel and, mm-hmm. you know, a little further out, you know, at least 4 feet from the house. But I was reading up about the mulches, and in the past I've used wood mulch, but the pest guy was saying actually the wood mulches wouldn't be good against the house for the same reason, because it would attract termites.
Yeah.
So I was going to go with sand, and then I realized, after looking into that the fire ants love that. Okay, I'm down to gravel. And so I didn't know if you had an experience with that in terms of the type of gravel to use that would be
that. Yes, I do. First of all, a couple of myths. The pest guys all say the same stuff. They all say mm-hmm. that stuff, and it's based on almost a rare experience. You know, that's what mm-hmm. people who they tend to focus on, you know, on their existing beliefs. Okay, mm-hmm. if you're worried about the termites, instead of going with gravel, go with a crushed slate or slag. You know the stuff you get. It looks like chips of gray rock. I can't remember
slate. Kind of a sharp,
a little sharp, flinty looking stuff. You know, you put it 2 or 3 inches deep up against there, and the reason I like that, because weeds aren't going to grow in it, and it will in gravel, you know. And so you just get a few bags of that. You can also get a piece of tin, you know, just like they use, you know, you can get long sheets of it like they use for in the gutter section at the big box store, and lay it along there, you know, and then throw dirt on top of it. It's just a physical barrier.
So keep the weeds from coming up.
Well, and also to keep the mulch off the side of the house. You know, you get this stuff. It's it's like a paper airplane looking stuff, except it's 8 or 10 or 15 feet long. It's just shiny silver stuff you get at the big box store for gutter. Just put it on the ground going part ways up the house and throw your mulch on top of that. It's not that big a deal. By the way, the pest control people do put stuff that lasts a long time in the soil. However, it's not absorbed by plant roots. It don't want poison your vegetables.
Okay.
So, you know, it's one of those things where it just doesn't happen. So, you know, there's that. Also, you get into better dirt a couple of feet away from your house anyway. So what I would do is I would put it far. Mine is about a foot and a half away from the house. I've got a 35-foot-long raised bed along the west side of my house, and I made it where I can walk between it and the house so I can reach the back of it and pick stuff better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I like that idea. The first thing you said was granite chips.
Yeah, it's called slate or granite or whatever. It looks like, you know, flat piece of gray flinty looking stuff.
Okay, great. I'm going to check that out. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, appreciate it. Thanks for your call.
Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Java, nobody's helping us with this thing.
The persimmons. I don't know if they were like me, and this is the first time they heard of it.
Well, I've got some ideas, but we're not going to talk about them just yet. We're going to see if somebody help us out. Knife, spoon, or fork? Persimmon seed, what do you think? Now, is Anthony from Vidalia been holding on? Anthony, good morning. How are you, sir?
How are you, Felder?
So far, so good.
Listen, I'm concerned about these army worms.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do to make them either, well, the birds apparently don't like them.
No, the birds and spiders and wasps, they eat a lot of them, but there's a whole lot more than the birds can handle. There's not much practical you can do about it. There are some sprays you can use, but they kill all the good guys, too. What'll kill an armyworm will kill most everything else that's out there, including worms and stuff. Most of the time, by the time you notice the armyworms, they're big enough to where they're at the end of their damage. They're about to move on. No, they don't stay around. So by the time you notice the damage, usually the damage is already done, and the worms are going to turn into to cocoons and then turn into moths and fly away. See, so usually by the time you notice it, you don't need to worry much about it. There are some sprays you can use that work pretty well. But for the most part, if you've had a real bad armyworm attack, it's too late to put some fertilizer out. But in the spring, throw a little fertilizer out there to help the grass recover a little bit better. And that's pretty much it. Hope for some rain, a little fertilizer. You know, if you want to get a liquid fertilizer like you put on the end of your garden hose, That stuff will get like a shot in the arm. It'll fertilize the grass and help it, but it won't stick around so long to make your grass tender for winter. So, you know, if you get one of these hose-in attachments or liquid fertilizer and just give it a good shot of that stuff, and if we get a good rain, your grass will do fine.
So you don't need to elevate the mower any?
Well, you have Bermuda grass, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Bermuda grass is a grass that tolerates being cut kind of low. I wouldn't cut it all the time real high. It's the only grass that really likes to be cut low, but not too low. So you just mow it. Put one of those hose-in fertilizers on there and just mow it and expect the grass to recover. These things have been around for a long time. They've never killed a lawn.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time.
All right.
And I appreciate the program, my son.
Oh, hey, thanks for being part of it. So you want to do another phone call, or you want to do
Let's go ahead and get to Richard. He's been
holding. Richard from Maven. What's going on, man?
Hey, I found this blue mushroom out in my yard this week. It's about the size of an orange, and just as blue as it can be, and I've never seen it before.
Yeah, is it on a stem or is it like an orange
stem?
Okay. First of all, I've seen mushrooms. I've studied mycology. I've been on forays. Last year, I went on a whole thing just where we did nothing but look at different. But I cannot keep. I don't know the difference in them. I don't keep track of them, so I don't have no idea what it is. There are some really good mushroom sites, and these two women who took me through the woods the other day looking for this special type of thing. One of them has a mushroom identification thing. She just took a picture of it, and boom, there they were. So, and if you can make a note to shoot me an email at, I'll tell you what, if there's any way you can get a picture of it and send it to me, then we'll find out what it is. Because I'm curious about it. Okay. I mean, I like reds and yellows and browns, but I've never seen a blue one either.
Yeah, and it's just as blue as it can be. You can't mistake it for any other color.
Is it in your yard? Can you still find it?
Yeah.
If you could get a picture of it and email it to me, go to felderushingblog.blog, and it says email me and send me a picture of it, then we'll find out because I'm curious now.
Well, I don't have internet or anything like that. Well, but I'll give it a try.
Okay. You got a phone with a camera on it?
Yeah.
Well, do that and then find somebody and send it to me.
Okay.
Otherwise, meanwhile, I wouldn't munch on it. I would not eat it.
I'm not a mushroom eater.
I'm not either. But anyway, we'll see if we can find out.
Okay.
Okay, appreciate it.
Bye.
You know, I was walking through the yard the other day, Java. You ever notice sometimes there's these little green worms hanging from long, skinny, you're just in the middle of nowhere, just hanging from a tree. Uh-huh. Little bitty green worms on a long, skinny thread. That thread came out of it, which is kind of creepy to begin with, you know. But it got on me, and it started crawling away, and it's one of those that pulls up and then moves, and it pulls up. It's called an inchworm. And I'm thinking, okay, I remember a song about it. There's a bunch of songs about an inchworm, but I found one with an old guy named Danny Kaye who sang it. And so for today's cheesy tune, I thought I'd get Danny Kaye to talk about the inchworm. I'm horticulturist Felder Rushing. Me and Java and Lisa, we're sitting here laughing about me stealing Lisa's knife and giving it back to her and all that stuff. But anyway, if you want to give us a call and talk about gardening, toll free 1-877-MPB-RING. Still want to know about knife, fork, and spoon in a persimmon? We'll be right back with more of the Gestalt Gardener on MPB.
You and your arithmetic, you'll probably go far. Inchworm, measuring the marigold, seems to me you'd stop and see how beautiful they are. Seems to me you'd stop and see.
Okie dokie, welcome back. Horticulturist Phil Rushing. Jav, I just showed a picture of this thing called a ghost pipe.
And it was, what's the word I'm looking for? Translucent.
Yeah, I mean, you can see through it. It's white, but you can see through it. Anyway, I had seen a post by Melissa Sinelli. Melissa works there on campus at Ole Miss. And she and her friend, Anna Blessed, met me up there. They took me 2 miles into the woods to show me 3 patches of this rare thing called a ghost pipe.
Yeah, and you showed me a couple other pictures of the different mushrooms that y'all saw on your walk, and that was incredible.
Well, here's the deal. The mushrooms, the toadstools, the puffballs, all those kind of things, you know, they're colorful. I got ribbons. I've got dark, almost black ones. I've got all different kinds. But the ghost pipe is not a mushroom.
Oh.
It's a flower of a plant that doesn't make its own food at all. There's a reason it doesn't have any green to it. It's a parasite. It grows on other stuff. And here's the deal. It's related to blueberries. You know, that little flower that comes up and hangs over, it's pollinated by bumblebees and flies and stuff. But it grows on a fungus. It gets its nutrients from a fungus that grows on wild blueberries. So it's a blueberry that can't make its own, doesn't have its own roots or leaves and all, and it won't grow on other blueberries. It has to have an intermediary. So there's a fungus, a good fungus, grows on blueberries, gets its nutrients, and then this grows on that, and it comes up white and clear. It's called a ghost pipe. Anyway, we found 3 colonies of it, and we're going to, on today's podcast, can we use a picture of that?
Yeah, we're going to post it up with the podcast. It's a funky looking thing.
Yeah, so if you go to what's our podcast thing?
Oh, just go to mpbonline.org.
mpbonline.org. Or just Google ghost pipe, and there's 3 colonies of North. Anyway, it's just one of those oddball little things that keep your juices going.
There you go.
Okay, now, I don't have my glasses here, but it looks like Marcy in Ocean Springs.
That's correct.
Hey, Marcy, good morning.
Hey, Felder.
How are you?
I was trying to just pass along this information with the call screener, but she said, no, you're going to go online and tell them what you know. Okay, so I heard the lady talking about native plants and how she could find out more information, and I just so happened to have ordered a book from, you know, the place that everybody orders everything. And it came really fast. It's called Native Plants of the Southeast. It's a comprehensive guide to the best 460 species for the garden by Mr. Larry Melichamp.
And
the photographs are by Will Stewart. It is gorgeous. I think I paid $34 for it, and it's a hardback. And, I mean, it's sort of like a reference book, but it's also broken down into categories.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm familiar with the book.
Amazing.
Yeah, and they're not just weedy stuff. These are landscape quality native plants.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yes. but now here's
the
problem.
There's also a primer. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No,
you.
No, that's
also
okay.
A primer that was available. So I ordered that one from Barnes.
Yeah,
but that hasn't come in yet.
The only problem I have with those books is they don't have how to landscape with them. It's just here's what they are and some of here's how they grow, but it doesn't show how to arrange them in trees, shrubs, ground cover, that kind of thing.
Right.
But it's an excellent reference book.
You know what? Yes. But it's probably, this is a little, what do you call it, whenever people make a comment and leave their name and what they do and all that. Anyway, it says this book is for anyone wishing to move beyond the cookie-cutter landscape and reconnect with our vanishing natural world.
Yeah, which is fancy for saying, buy my book because it's about something that other books aren't about. I mean,
I'm thinking, you know, it's probably for people who have some experience but who want to really transform the landscape to what it should.
I'm real familiar. The book is well done, but it's a reference book for native plants that are landscape quality. A lot of times we just don't think of them. We think of magnolia, dogwood, redbud, you know, and that's about it. But those are all native plants. But this is about the wonderful palette of plants that we can use in our landscapes as regular yard plants that happen to be native. And they're beautiful.
Exactly.
They're beautiful.
So you've seen the book. It was written in 2014.
Yeah, I know the man. I go to a lot of native plant conferences.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, so, I love it.
Great, great, terrific tip, Marcy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And by the way, I did get your most recent book, and it was a joy to read.
Thank you.
I read your stuff, too.
Okay. And by the way, go to my blog, Fellow Rushing Blog. I don't sell anything. And say where it says email me, and I'll send you my little pamphlet on how to use native plants in landscapes. It's got some pictures and lists and stuff. And it's a good thing to tuck into the cover of your other book, which tells you what these plants look like.
That's a wonderful suggestion.
And it's free.
Thank you so much.
It's free.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you.
You bet. Appreciate it. Okay, now we're going to go down to the Gulf Coast and talk to Van. Van, you going to help us out with this persimmon thing?
Sure enough.
Okay, what's up, man? I cut mine open. And me and Java and Lisa and we all see what it is. So what's the story?
I grew up in Southern Illinois with farmers for grandparents, and they always did it, and it was either a shovel, which indicated a cold, snowy winter.
Yeah, a lot of digging.
Or a garden fork, which indicated a mild winter where you could get out in the garden in the spring.
Okay. What about the knife?
I've never seen a knife.
Well, it's supposed to mean a biting, cold, cutting wind, a sharp winter.
Oh.
Okay. Well,
I've opened hundreds and I've never seen a knife.
Well, it's just it's just a straight thing.
Right.
So sometimes kind of oval, sometimes it's got different prongs on it like a fork, and sometimes it's as long and skinny like a knife. This one happens to be like a Java. What did it look? I mean, we looked at it really close.
Yeah, this one was a spoon.
Yeah, a spoon or a shovel.
A shovel, yeah.
So according to it, we're going to have us a deep digging out, kind of a cold, maybe snowy winter, even in Mississippi. Uh-huh. We'll see.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sounds good.
Cool, man. Appreciate it. And let me ask you this. It's not easy cutting these things open. You got to slice a finger off.
All right. The men would use their fingers and pocket knives. The women would take a pair of pliers.
And that's what I did. I do the girly thing. The girly thing works for me. A pair of pliers keeps you from cutting into your finger because this knife I had is a sharp thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you, man.
Sure enough.
Little esoteric stuff about gardening. You know, we can talk about planting and fertilizing and digging and spraying and bugs and all that kind of stuff. And this is a great weekend for doing a lot of that stuff. If you don't plant lettuce and kale and violas and pansies and pretty stuff, at least put a pot full of them out there. Stick some daffodil bulbs down deep and they'll come up through it all. But if nothing else, if you got a little vegetable garden or raised bed, just sort of scratch the dirt up a little bit and throw some crimson clover seed or ryegrass seed. Grow something over the top of it. Grow turnips, anything to grow over the wintertime. It'll keep the ground not only from compacting, but the roots grow down deep and absorb nutrients, and the tops will grow nice and big. And in the spring, you just simply take it and dig all that stuff in, and your dirt will be loose, it'll be fertile, it'll be nice and fluffy. It's called green manure or cover crop. It's a great week for doing that. Now let's slide.
We're going to Belzona.
Belzona. Let's talk to Mark up in the Delta. Yes, heart of the Delta. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Felda, how are you?
Fine. What's going on, man?
All right. I got a plot that I got nothing that seems to grow better than pigweed in it. And when I first started, working that plot, it didn't have pigweeds in it. And I guess I must have gotten some gin trash or something put out there, and now I got nothing but pigweed. My question is, how do I get rid of that pigweed? Can I just till it, spray it with Roundup, till it? spray it?
Well, if you're going to till it, you know, why spray it first? You know, tilling it alone. What I would do, and keep in mind, one pigweed plant can have a jillion seeds. So if you let it go to seed, it's just going to keep spreading seeds. And there's already enough seeds in there to come up next year and the year after that. So what I would do is I would just cut it down, especially before it, you know, when it starts to flower, you know, it's got the little skinny looking, they're not really flowers, but they're little spiky things. If you'll just cut them down before they flower, that'll keep them going to seeds. And as their roots die, they make nice little paths for roots of your vegetables. And also, what I would do is I would just, whenever you see it, just cut it down. And then you can just till it in. No sense in spraying if you're going to cut it and till it anyway, because that does the job without the sprays.
Well, no, I was thinking that I would, if I till it some more, I would pick up more seeds, bring them to the top.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you'll do that. You'll do that. You know, when
yeah,
I was...
And then I can kill, and then I can kill those seeds off.
No, there's nothing. There ain't nothing you can spray that's going to kill those seeds.
Not the seeds. I mean, when they do, you know, grow into pigweed.
How big is your plot?
I don't know. Maybe... I don't know, maybe 40 feet by 40 feet.
Well, that's a plot. That's a plot.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that helps is if you can mulch. That's too big an area to mulch, cover with pine straw or leaves or something like that. But that keeps a lot of weed seeds from sprouting, and mulch does. But unfortunately,
yeah, the problem with that is if I got mulch I can put out there. The problem with that is if I'm trying to grow something, I got to cut it. You know, I got to, you know, dig up the soil and cover that, and then the pigweed just gonna come right back up.
I know. You're talking to somebody who knows. I understand. I'm there myself. I pull weeds and I chop weeds. I only spray stuff that pulling or chopping doesn't take care of, because I squirt a little Roundup on some poison ivy, or some honeysuckle or something like that. But you know the sprays. You'd have to put a pre-emerge out, a granular thing to kill all the seeds. And it's expensive and it's tricky, and you got to do it over and over and over. So here's what I would do. You're not going to like what I'm about to say, but you know it's true. You know what I'm about to say is true. It's not fun. Get you you know what a flat-bladed file is? You know, they're long like a knife, but they got two sides to them, a file.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know what a file is.
Get you one of those and go ahead and spray with a little wooden handle to screw on the end of it and use it. Every time you're about to go out with your hoe, sharpen the hoe. I don't mind saying this because here's the deal. You don't have to chop. People who chop with a hoe are, that's not the way hoes work. You sharpen
right.
It. You sharpen it, and you just sort of pull it along the top, and you push it back and forth, and you basically slice stuff off at the ground. It's like shaving.
Yeah.
If you got to chop with a razor, get you a new razor. So if you're to sharpen the hoe, you can go down there with one hand in your pocket with a hoe and just sort of scrape it along, and that keeps a nice little dust mulch out there. And, yeah, it brings up some seeds, but it takes care of it just about as quick as spraying if you got a sharp hoe, especially around the little corner of it. And I don't mind saying this. It sounds old-fashioned, old school, but it works. It works. Other than that, you know, get you one of these little lightweight gas-powered cultivator-type tillers, and just go in between your plants with that every now and then. But there's not a good there's not a good herbicide control for these. They're just not.
Oh. Okay, man.
I wish there was, man. I mean, I'm from the Delta. I get it.
I wish there was.
I do too. You know, get you a straw hat while you're at it. You know, you can look old school, but man, you're growing food, so they can just shut up.
I got you. Okay, man. Appreciate it.
Good luck. And I should have told him to plant some clover and stuff over the wintertime to work your dirt up, you know, to green cover crop. Anyway, the knife, the spoon, the fork. We found a spoon, so allegedly we're going to have a cold winter we're going to have to dig out of, Java.
Which really doesn't do well in Mississippi, but we'll see what happens.
Here's hoping that it was meant for people in Illinois.
There we go.
We'll see. By the way, State Fair, the corn is $5 for a thing of corn, that roasted corn, but it is so good. It is so good.
That's my mother's favorite thing to go to the fair.
It's expensive, $5, but it's the fair. Get you a free biscuit from the Department of Agriculture. Get your thing of corn. Walk around with a big old smile. And by the way, you got some corn on your chin.
So once a year thing, go out and enjoy yourself.
That's right. Now let's go down and talk to Mikey in Mobile. Mikey, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Hi, good morning. I'm doing great, man. It couldn't be more beautiful. Yep. I mean, it couldn't feel any better.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm going to be in Mobile on the morning of Saturday, October the 30th at 10 o'clock down at Central Prez. We're doing that big plant swap thing, so I hope to see you there.
That is what I called you about, Felder. I'm trying to get ready. You know, it's like I've not ever been to a plant swap before.
Just bring a plant.
I have swap plants. I've started, you know, gifting my neighbors. Most of the time, they're happy.
Well, just
have re-gifted me.
Just bring any kind of plant that a beginner, you know, don't just dig something or make some cuttings and seeds. You know, bring something that somebody doesn't know what it is. It has a half a chance. And it's free. It starts at 10 o'clock at Central Prez, and that's going to be October the 30th. I'm looking forward to being there.
Okay. Well, I got stuff that I can dig up. I got stuff that I can, give away as your plant pots already. Stuff that I can,
Do it now. Don't dig something that's going to be wilted before they get it home. Get something that they can actually, that has a chance of surviving.
If you could dig a shrub, like an American Beauty bush.
Well, if you could do it, I'm just saying, do it now. Don't wait till that day or it ain't going to survive. Plan ahead.
Yes, sir. That's why I'm asking now.
All righty. Woohoo. We'll see you there.
There we go.
Yep. Knife, spoon. We got us a spoon. We got us a hard winter coming, man. You need
I'm looking for a jacket now.
Yeah. You know, halfway through the fair, it always gets cold. We'll see.
Yeah.
So I'm going to head down there and get me some corn and stop by the Department of Agriculture booth and get me a biscuit with some local homemade syrup. All corn. Always has a demonstration on making syrup, cane syrup. They always get live demonstrations, so that'll be fun. A lot of stuff to do. But anyway, it's a good weekend for plants. It's a good time for walking out in the woods and look at the mushrooms, see if you can find this ghost pipe. It's such a weird little plant. And again, Google it, see what it looks like, or go to Mississippi Gardening Facebook. Got a couple little posts on that. Meanwhile, if you have a chance, take a kid to a farmer's market, take them to the fair, show them some livestock, get them a sack of bulbs, get them something that they can do to show how we do business, get dirty.